Good evening, everyone. I'm going to call tonight's meeting to order. If we can all rise for the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Kreatek.
Present.
Ms. Leone.
Dismissed.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present. Seeking approval of minutes from our December 21st, 2021 meeting. Any comments on minutes? Minutes stand approved. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. As just about everyone may be aware, tonight we will be appointing a new member later on tonight's agenda to fill our city council vacancy that was created when our Mayor Reynolds resigned from city council. So tonight, during the second public comment period, after all in attendance have a chance to comment, the candidates for the council vacancy will have the option to speak about their candidacy, which is about 5 minutes. I'm not going to play anyone off stage tonight, but just trying to be respectful of everyone's time here this evening. After we hear from the candidates who wish to speak, we will proceed with the rest of the agenda for tonight. When we reach agenda item 10E, that is the resolution to appoint our seventh member, we will go through the process of nominating and appointing a new council member. Prior to nominations tonight, council members will all have an opportunity to make comments, ask any questions they may have of myself or our city council solicitor to my left, and generally discuss the appointment that's on the agenda tonight. So we're going to start with our first public comment. And our first public comment is for any subject not being voted on in tonight's meeting. And just a YouTube reminder to our audience at home, if you start this meeting after 7 p.m., please make sure to scroll ahead so that the YouTube stream is current rather than a recording of an earlier portion of the meeting. So I'm going to go through the sign-up sheet first for who already signed up for the first public comment. Now, just a reminder, our first public comment is for anything not being voted on for tonight's agenda. So the first name signed up is Anna Smith. But Ms. Smith, are you here to talk about the... So I will start with you first for the second, courtesy of the floor tonight, if that's okay with you. Same with Ms. Levy. I believe you're here to talk about the council appointment, so I will work through in a second. And then our other person signed up tonight is Michelle Downing. Is Michelle here? Michelle, I invite you to the lectern if you want to give your comments to council. I just ask that you state your name and address for the record.
My name is Michelle Downing. I reside at 626 West Lehigh Street here in the city of Bethel. I came to speak to council tonight because I, like myself, like many others, I'm a survivor of domestic abuse, and like many others, I was ashamed to report it. At the time, I was in fear that my partner was going to lose their career. Recently, I believe that the Bethel Police Department was brought into a civil matter, and it's likely that they were even unaware of the history or what circumstances that they were walking into when the 911 system was weaponized by an individual who is well aware of the police procedure in response. What they did not know and did not ask me about is that I am currently recovering from a traumatic brain injury that causes, among other issues, me to struggle with things like my balance, stairs, and emotional regulation. This is not the first time that I've been considered to be a peer intoxicated, and that has not matched the accurate assessment of my real physical state. The police informed me that they had received a 911 call because of a potential of self-harm, and I was assisted to sit down inside my own home and then escorted to the hospital for what was reported to be my own protection. While I do understand the rationale and the desire to stand on procedures, that procedure happens to be weaponized against me to create an opportunity to remove items from my own home, including two beloved pets who I have not seen and have no knowledge of since the date this occurred. I would like to stress that while the situation regarding my precious pets may be a civil matter and it may seem trivial to some people, the ownership of at least one of those pets predates my marriage, and again, to this day, I don't know where they are or if they're even alive. I have engaged numerous county and city agencies, and I feel like I have not been heard. I am in my own right a respected, educated, and well-knowledgeable professional in the field of mental health, and I have served that community here in the Lehigh Valley for almost 15 years now. I understand these procedures more intimately than the average citizen does. I know what will happen if you call 911 and ask for a welfare check or say that someone is going to harm themselves. But that did not protect me from being protected in this situation. I would be more than willing to allow the system to run its course, but again, I have two living creatures that I haven't heard from in almost 3 weeks now, and I don't even know if they're alive. I should also mention that that exact hour, a few hours before the Bethlehem police showed up at my house, I had to have my oldest and third dog euthanized in the middle of our living room floor shortly before the Bethlehem police came knocking. Since the incidents, I'm experiencing severe trauma symptoms. I work from my bedroom with the doors closed and my curtains drawn because I'm afraid that the police are going to show up again. Whether or not that's rational, that's trauma. My gut reaction if I needed to call for help at this point in time is that I would never activate the 911 system and I would not call again. I am unable to move on from this situation, have received little to no response from the Bethlehem Police Department, despite following all of the rules and filling out all of the correct paperwork. I am coming here before council because I remain unheard, and I would appreciate some assistance. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you for coming out, Ms. Downing. Our chief of police is, of course, here tonight. If I don't know if you have an opportunity to engage Chief Cott yet, or you're welcome to hang around after the meeting if you would talk to any members of council individually. Our next individual who was signed up is Bud Hackett. I believe Mr. Hackett, did you want to talk about the appointment this evening? So again, I will follow what I said to others and we'll recognize you when we get to second, third, seat of the floor. Is there anyone else present tonight who wants to make comment on anything not being voted on this evening? Now again, the council vacancy will be voted on, so I will recognize those individuals shortly, but is there anyone in attendance who wants to comment on anything not on tonight's agenda? Mr. Antal?
Stephen Antal, 77 Ridge, 201 Butstown Road. At the last council meeting, there was an appointment for a solicitor for council, also the appointment of the assistant solicitor for the administration. Both items were on the agenda for that meeting, which became public on the 14th of January. Subsequent to that meeting, I was informed that possibly the person appointed as an assistant solicitor to the administration was also a candidate for council solicitor. I reflected on this for some time. It bothered me, and it really then created problems for me. So it gave me reason to ask questions tonight. The first question is, when was the person offered by administration position as assistant solicitor, since it was on the agenda for the 4th? So it'd be sometime quite prior to that. Number two, did the administration know that this person they were considering for assistant solicitor was also seeking the position of council solicitor? to the person appointed by the administration for the administration position inform the administration that they had applied for the council solicitor position. Since the choice of the solicitor was made at council's previously unannounced 10th of January executive session, did the administration have knowledge of the results, thereby clearing the way for its selection for assistant solicitor position? Should not the deliberations at a council executive session be kept secret until publicly announced? So, were the meeting's results leaked to the administration, and who might be responsible? Now that raises serious questions for me. And going back to the 18th of January meeting, I feel, and I spoke to some professionals who practice law, and they have had problems with the 18th meeting. The fact that the resolution read, Brian J. Pinella, Esquire, is hereby appointed to City Council Solicitor because it's the decision was made at the executive session and also was confirmed at the council meeting. Now, in a sense of transparency and openness, which we would expect of council, I feel that resolution should have read, council will hereby appoint a solicitor based upon our reviews and read the list of the candidates for the position, and then vote publicly for that person. That would be transparency and openness to the public. So this was all done in secrecy because the meeting on January 18th, rather the January 10th executive session meeting was never announced at the January 4th meeting. So there's secrecy here. Why? The last time City Council, to the best of my knowledge, after a bit of research, was a solicitor appointed at an executive session. And that goes back to John Morganelli. And Council at that time said, we will go into executive session to vote for a solicitor, and the names of the candidates were mentioned at the open meeting, and then he was appointed solicitor at the executive session and then announced at the next public meeting. So I hate to see this council with this new members getting off on a foot where it, to me, the lack of transparency and the need for secrecy. So this whole idea of how information got to the administration really is very, very troublesome to me, and I would look forward to some answers.
Thank you, Mr. Antal. Is there anyone else in attendance this evening who'd like to make comment on anything not being voted on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, I'm going to move on to the second courtesy of the floor. So I'll go back to the original names that were signed up before I open it up to the room. So I'll start with Anna Smith.
Good evening. My name is Anna Smith, 631 Ridge Street in South Bethlehem. A week and a half ago, I was planning to speak to you this evening under very different circumstances. I had hoped to introduce myself and my thoughts on the future of our city in support of my own application to council, but I'm here tonight to present my thoughts on why you shouldn't nominate me or someone like me to fill the vacancy on council. You can make a historic nomination this evening, and I want to discuss briefly why this matters so much. Like most communities in the Lehigh Valley, our city faces significant challenges in assuring access to affordable and quality housing for individuals of all income levels. We need to act locally to address the impacts of climate change with an eye on environmental justice. We need to make sure we're addressing public health and safety using a comprehensive approach that leaves no one behind and that centers the inherent worth of every individual who calls our city home. We need to ensure that our youth have equitable access to sports, parks, recreation, after-school and summer programming that provide opportunities for community building. We need to support the small businesses that are crucial to building livable, connected neighborhoods, recognizing that women and entrepreneurs of color in our community are leading the way. And we need to make decisions balancing the everyday livability of our city and the limitations of a budget that has relied on debt to make ends meet. We have an excellent team of council members here prepared to meet these challenges, but as folks who know me have heard ad nauseum, the best possible plans, policies, and proposals are developed from community-engaged processes that draw on the lived experiences and knowledge of stakeholders from all backgrounds. And it's up to you as council members to engage stakeholders throughout our city in these discussions and to represent the perspectives of community members here in Town Hall. As I think about who would make the best addition to your team, I'm focusing on who could engage more members of our community and highlight perspectives that have been underrepresented historically in this rotunda. I'm convinced that there's one candidate before you this evening who has a head start when it comes to building the relationships necessary to broaden the reach and representation of your work due to a lifetime of experience as a resident and a trusted educator. There is one applicant whose deep ties to our community and ability to add representation, which has been missing from Bethlehem City Council since its incorporation, could be transformative as you collectively tackle the challenges facing our community. I decided to withdraw my application for council because I believe that the appointment of Bethlehem's first Black council member is long overdue, and I'm happy to support the historic nomination of Dr. Wendolyn Enix to City Council. However, I would add that you have a number of other candidates with valuable experience and desire to serve our community here this evening. And council is not the only body that requires dedicated volunteers with deep community ties. I hope that this initial call for applications can kickstart an effort to increase representation on all of our city's authorities, boards, and commissions, and that you seriously consider the creation of some sort of citizen city government academy, something like that, you come up with a name, to prepare qualified candidates from all backgrounds and areas of the city for service on the many extremely important ABCs that shape our community. Increasing representation and diversity of perspectives in every aspect of our city's work will make our community stronger, and you have the power to begin that process of engagement now, hopefully with some of the same folks who you'll be considering this evening. And I look forward to supporting it and being a part of it in any way that I can. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak this evening.
Thank you. Moving on, we'll turn to Ms. Levy.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Rhea Levy. I live at 1609 Stanford Road here in Bethlehem, PA. I'm also going to be reading a letter from another individual besides myself. So this evening, I stand not to regurgitate Dr. Wendolyn Enix's resume, as she's highly educated and well qualified for the position on City Council. The fact that her family has a deep-rooted history dating back to the 1920s, the fact that she was born and raised and educated in Bethlehem are all added pluses. However, the quality that stands out most is her involvement in the community where she lives, is Bethlehem. I'm going to read that again. However, the quality that stands out most is her involvement in the community here where she lives in Bethlehem. Even though many of us live in communities all of our lives, yet so many of us do not get involved. Enix is not that person. The injustices that she faced while living in Bethlehem are the catalyst that drove her to see to it that all people are treated justly and fairly. Imagine a child being shunned or scorned because their teacher refused to distribute cupcakes their mother made to celebrate a birthday. Or imagine a time when you had to clean up your brother's vomit because the janitor refused to do it because of the color of his skin. Dr. Enix was that child. The time has come for us to take a page out of the history book of the early Moravians that settled here in Bethlehem 280 years ago. As a community, they were ahead of their time when it came to equity, diversity, and inclusion. Even though it was a period in history when slavery was the law of the land, they defied those laws by not adhering to society's hatred towards individuals. They provided housing, health care, child care, elder care, and education for all their brethren. The indigenous and blacks ate, slept, worked, and buried alongside the Moravian Europeans. In closing, there is a reason the Moravians named this city Bethlehem. It was supposed to be that light, that example of what brotherhood and sisterhood should mean. Therefore, the time has come for members of City Council to change the narrative. Let us be an example to other majority white communities. Show them that representation matters. Show them that you are not just chatting, a term that my son's generation often uses, meaning talking just for talking's sake. Nominate your first African American, Dr. Wanda Enix, for the vacant seat on City Council, and add to the tapestry one of the descendants of an enslaved generation that built and bled for what is America. I'm also going to read a message from Liza Holzinger. She was the Director of Development and Public Relations Coordinator and a retired Bethlehem Area Public Library staff. She lives at 301 Carver Drive in Bethlehem. And she said, I would like to voice my support for Dr. Wendlin Enix to be appointed to the vacant City Council seat. The mission statement on the city's Bethlehem's website reads in part, today, Bethlehem is experiencing an economic and cultural renaissance, promising a future as bright as the city's past. I firmly support that the past 2 years of increased awareness of racial inequality will inform City Council's decision tonight. Now is your chance to live into the city's mission statement. Dr. Enix's family has resided in Bethlehem for over 100 years. Like many black families in the city, they were educated, worked, and were productive citizens in a city that even today does not represent them in governing body. Dr. Enix is well educated and her community serves and profession, I'm sorry, Dr. Wanderlin is well educated and her community serve and professional resume makes her exceptionally qualified to serve on council as a council member. She is endorsed by Bethlehem NAACP. I respectfully ask you to make the historical appointment for Dr. Wendlin Enix to City Council. And I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Levy. I'll turn to Mr. Bud Hackett, who had previously signed up. While Mr. Hackett's coming to the lectern, for anyone who had walked in previously, we're still just taking comment from audience members. We haven't started with the applicants yet.
Sorry, I had dropped my glasses over there.
We'll be here.
My name is Bud Hackett. I live at 201 East Makeda Road in Bethel, and I'd like to provide some public input on the selection criteria and process for the new council member. Tonight is such an important night for at least one candidate for the people of Bethel, and such an important time for the city. The new mayor and council are so very lucky to have received $34 million from President Biden. But the city's business manager has warned of 7% plus tax increases in the coming years. Big decisions need to be made over the next few months. It is my hope and the hope of many in the city that council choose a highly qualified person to join their ranks. My request is that you develop, and I haven't seen the criteria upon which the selection is made, but I'm sure it includes experience, skills, character, and of course politics. I would ask that you consider the concept of balance for city council. I understand that it is a all democratic council, and there is a certain sameness of thought among the members. Remember the old expression, when two people always agree, one of them is unnecessary. Please consider that council may be better off with a new council member that offers a balance to the groupthink that we have on council right now, or the level of agreement that you have. Maybe someone with a different view would actually help council members look at different perspectives on key issues. Maybe someone with a private sector view could help council. Someone who doesn't work in the public sector or in the nonprofit sector. Someone who's had to struggle making a payroll and has to employ people and has had the experience maybe of financing, accounting, production operations. It is a different perspective. Bethel City Council would be better if there were more council members with a different, more balanced approach to managing the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hackett.
So that concludes everyone who had previously signed up, but I will go around the room starting on the left. So this is an opportunity to vote on anything on tonight's, opportunity to speak on anything on tonight's agenda, which would include tonight's appointment, of course. So I'll start over here on the left. And in front.
Margot Hillman, my first name spelled M-A-R-G-O-T, and I live at 1256 Moffitt Avenue in the city. I'm here to support the appointment of Dr. Enix to City Council. As has been noted, a number of impressive candidates have applied for the open seat. We are fortunate. So why Dr. Enix? Because in addition to her qualifications and history of service, I believe her cover letter is the only one that mentions issues that concern me very much: affordable housing and homelessness. That's my whole statement. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Continuing to go around the room now, again, this is an opportunity for any members of the audience to give comment, and then we'll conclude with actual remarks from the applicants. Is there anyone else on the left side of the room who wants to give comment this evening? Sir?
My name is John Irons, 1204 West Market Street in Bethlehem. I'm going to make a statement about the appointment tonight of a new council member. I think there's absolutely a need to change, representation in the city and our local governments. That is something that I'm personally very committed to, and seeing, the changing faces on the council here. is very refreshing, and seeing a lot of engagement in the process and seeing the number of applicants who were interested in being appointment is very encouraging. For me, I think there's a lot of qualifications, there's a lot of people who are well qualified on this list, and to me, when I look at it, one of the qualities that I'm searching for is that engagement piece, because as many of you know, being in the positions that you are, getting people to talk to you, getting people to get involved in municipal government is very hard. You know, I have some experience both in education and in community organizing, and I know that, you know, talking about issues is difficult. There's a lot of misinformation around there. And in general, I think the government process is very bureaucratic and hard to understand, so it's easy just to walk away and not pay attention. And so the active engagement is a process that needs to be designed from the ground up and have a lot of structure and intent. So I will look for the qualities of a person who has the ability to do that engagement. And so I look at people who have the community organizing experience. I think there are several candidates who have that. I think, Allison Mickle has that experience, both in their university career and in the community organizing. And then Darian Colbert, sitting behind me, also has a great deal of experience. And particularly working with young people, I'm an educator, and so looking forward to the future of Bethlehem and looking at engaging young people and getting kids who are in middle school and in high school involved in local government would be a great asset to the city and a great asset to our agenda and making progress. And so, those are things that I ask that you consider in your nomination tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Ryan. Is there anyone else on the left side of the room that wants to give comment this evening? Is there anyone in the center of the room?
Bill Shire, 1898 now, no? Before I read my prepared statement, I just like to add one little fact to what Reyes said. If you go into the original cemetery, God's Acre, and stand at the main aisle and look to your left, the first grave is a settler who unfortunately died during the first winter, and the second one says Daniel, an Indian boy, age 9. I would like to support Dr. Wandelin Innings for the council vacancy. We are fellow members of the Board of Directors of the South Bethlehem Historical Society. Dr. Enix is thoughtful, insightful, and incisive. She will bring to the council not only her academic credentials and experience, but a profound and appreciative knowledge of the history of Bethlehem. She is working on a book about Bethlehem's Black history, using in part what she learned from her father, Ernest Enix, who was a World War II veteran, a union official at Steele, a church deacon, and founder of the Colored Voters Association, who supported Mayor Biffle. During the administration of Kent Smith, a small park at the corner of Pawnee and Mohican Streets was named after Mr. Enix. Her grandfather, who was the son of former slaves, worked on the construction of the Hill to Hill Bridge. Prior to being a professor at Montclair University, Dr. Enix taught in the Bethlehem Area School District and was the executive director of an affordable child care center with 150 children and 32 full-time employees. Wandelin's mother was a descendant of Creek Indians, making her multiracial and an example of the future of America, which is becoming a multiracial society. For the essence of America is not a race, but rather an idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the center of the room who would like to give comment regarding the point? Ms. Diamond?
Barbara Diamond, 425 Center Street. I'm also here to support the appointment of Dr. Enix, as other people have pointed out. She has a long history of community service, deep roots in the community, and I think she would be an excellent candidate.
Thank you, Ms. Diamond. Is there anyone else in the center of the room who would like to give comment this evening? Sir?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. My name is Seth Moglen. I live at 726 Hillside Avenue in South Bethlehem. I also am here to enthusiastically support nomination of Wandelin Enix for Bethlehem City Council. I don't want to just repeat what others have said. You all have seen Dr. Enix's resume. You know that she has long experience as a teacher in the Bethlehem Public Schools. You know that she has decades of experience as a teacher and scholar. You know that she is a lifelong member of the Bethlehem NAACP and past president of the NAACP. I think I would like to add only to what others have said, perhaps a little bit of historical context about the experience of exclusion of African Americans in the city of Bethlehem. As some of you know, I've been at work on a book about the city from first contact to the present. As some of you here will know, African descended people preceded the Moravians here in Bethlehem. There were enslaved black people here living in what we now think of as South Bethlehem before the Moravians came. At every moment in the city's history, African Americans have contributed to the wealth and vitality of the city, and at every moment, they have experienced extraordinarily intense, systematic, sustained, and intentional exclusion. It is true, as Rhea Levy says, that the Moravians created a remarkably egalitarian community, but African-descended people were the only enslaved members of that congregation. As many of you know, the Bethlehem Steel Corporation was so determined not to hire African Americans that they even went to the length of creating special trains to import Mexican laborers here at a time when European immigration had been curtailed in the 1920s. As many of you will know, African Americans were so systematically excluded from most major employers in the city that entire generations of Rhea Levy's contemporaries left this city because they could not find dignified employment. It is so, so long past due that we correct this history of exclusion. Like others here, I am enormously excited and optimistic about the new council, about our new mayor, about our opportunity to create a more equitable and inclusive city now. But a crucial step in that direction is for us to expand who the people who are in positions to make decisions in the city. Professor Enix has all of the qualifications necessary to be a superb member of city council, and she will bring a perspective the council has not ever had before. The time has come. This is an enormously exciting day in the history of our city, and I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the center of the room who would like to give comment regarding tonight's appointment or anything else on the agenda? Mr. Antal?
Stephen Antal again. I didn't plan to speak, but I feel obliged. I've spoken to a number of people over the years and who were regulars at council, and the comments were, some of these people really don't know the city. And you would expect someone who's going to manage the city should have two things, intelligence and knowledge of the city. There was a time Bob Donches, Mike Schwader, Gene Belinsky, Maggie Zabel, Mr. Calvo, they were all born in the city, and the city did well under this, under the supervision. So, I personally don't know Dr. Enix, but what I've learned this evening, I don't want to be rude or facetious here, but if you took her years in the city and added all the years of people currently on council, I think she might outweigh you in terms of your the number of years. I apologize if it offends anybody, but it's a fact. Not a fact, but it's on my mind. So I think council has the obligation to bring to its to the council intelligence and experience of the city, because to rule a city, you must know the city.
Thank you, Mr. Antalix. Is there anyone else in the center of the room who'd like to give comment this evening? I'm going to move over to the right side of the room. Anyone to the right who would like to give comment regarding tonight's appointment? Is there anyone in the hallway who wants to give comment? Again, a shake of the head, no. So going once, going twice, we're going to proceed on with tonight's comments from our applicants. Thank you to all who gave comments so far. So now we're going to move over to the council vacancy. As I mentioned earlier, when we get to agenda item 10E tonight, we will hold our nominations and the vote to fill the current council vacancy that was created when our mayor, Mr. Reynolds, had resigned from council. We're going to move on to the applicants. Now tonight, Mr. Basilio Bonilla Jr. had pulled his name from the list of candidates to be considered. So even though his materials were publicized, he will not be considered this evening. And the candidates were given the option to comment. I believe just about everyone is here, so I will go in alphabetical order, starting with the beginning of the alphabet, to invite everyone up to the lectern to address council who wants to give comments. I'll start with Mr. Darren Colbert.
Good evening, City Council people, Bethlehem residents. It figures I'd have to go first. thank you for this opportunity to speak to all of you. Before I say anything, I do want to celebrate Dr. Wanda Lynn. Just her credentials, listen to her rich history. I do want to celebrate her as an elder of black people in this community. And that was wow, just listening to her rich history, I celebrate that. You're supposed to come up here and kind of sell yourself. And so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna just share a phrase and then I'm gonna tell a true story. And I'll close out with some thoughts. And so the phrase I'd like to share is, I believe people are the greatest asset on planet Earth. People are. And I believe we are way more powerful together. And so the story I'd like to tell takes place in Haiti. Literally 4 days after the earthquake, I had the wonderful privilege to lead a team in the Dominican Republic and then to Haiti right by ground zero. And when we got down there, we already had two team members down there and they were dealing with some different things. And so the night before, what I didn't know was someone thought they were in trouble, so they reached out to our congressman and said, hey, we're in trouble, send the Marines. Well, the Marines didn't come right away. So we come in 4 days later, I get down, we make this makeshift triage together, and we begin taking care of people. And while we're taking care of people, the Marines show up. Now, they can see that I'm leaving things, and so the Marine guy goes, I need these two people, where are they at? And I said, okay, let me get them for you. And he was really adamant, so I grabbed the two people and I brought them up, and he asked, are you safe? Yes, are you safe? Yes. And so after that, he grabs this pen-looking thing out of his pocket and he points it in the sky and he presses the button. I said, well, what are you doing? He goes, I'm communicating with our satellite. I said, well, what are you saying? He goes, I'm declaring this location a safe house. And I said, a safe house? I want you to understand the magnitude of the situation. The earthquake happened and really devastated that entire community. There's literally houses and bodies all around us. I said, how is this a safe house? And this is what he said, and this is what I'd like to share. He said, it's a safe house because of the relationship that your team has with the people because of the relationship. Now, what I'd like to tell you is that's what Bethlehem has the potential to be. And I'd like to say this. I believe all of us in this room have a piece of the answer, which means our solutions must come from our togetherness. Or, like you can see, is we is greater than me. And so I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to share with you today, and also celebrate all the council people. I know Allison very well, so thank you. Peace.
Thank you, Mr. Colbert. Our next candidate tonight is Mr. Edwin Corrado. If Edwin is here, I'd like to make comments. All right. Our next candidate is Michael Cunningham.
Good evening. My name is Mike Cunningham. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the current members of the City Council, Mayor, City itself, all the candidates. It's really an incredible opportunity to be able to be here and speak before everyone. And it's a real testament to the strength of our community. So many high-quality individuals were willing to step up and apply for this position. A little bit about myself. I am a Air Force veteran, I was a nuclear weapons maintainer. Currently, I am the infrastructure manager for IT at North Hampton Community College. Previous to that, I was the information technology manager at ArtsQuest. Also did IT for Bethlehem Area School District, and maybe a little, waiting tables in between. I made my application to City Council because of a very basic thought. I care very deeply about Bethlehem. I also feel I'm uniquely qualified because I have lived life here from more than one perspective. After my enlistment in the Air Force, I came here with little more than the clothes on my back. The struggle to make ends meet, like many folks in Bethlehem do every single day. I walk a couple miles to and from work to clean and wait on tables. I took the bus across town and put myself through college. And I met a lot of good people along the way. People that I'm still friends with today. Some of them are in this very room. Met my wife here, right down the street. Life's been pretty good for me. We bought a house right here in town. I can't say enough about how much I love this place. Adopting the city as my own has been a defining decision in my life, and I'm very happy with it. Putting roots down in Bethlehem has shown me things we should be concerned about, not only for ourselves, but for others as well. Living in a successful and thriving community requires constant care from all of us. As a member of the council and a member of the community, I want to focus on preserving the unique small town characteristics of Bethlehem while keeping up with the needed development, housing, and infrastructure changes that will be required in our not-so-distant future. This city is experiencing a serious issue with housing availability and cost. We're pricing our residents out of their own neighborhoods. I see this every day in Southside. I'm the vice president at the National Socals. Meet tons of members of the community working. I also work within the help desk at Northampton Community College. I talk to any number of people every single day, all walks of life. I do want to stress that we need to keep up on the development and housing and infrastructure changes that will be required. But it's squeezing the way that we're doing, the way that things have developed within the town, the way that our markets have gone are squeezing disproportionately on those without as much. Inflation is hitting folks very hard. And it's causing it to be extremely difficult to find housing, to pay for rent. A single bedroom apartment is $1,200-$1,300 a month. Makes it very difficult. My own brother has been trying to move here for 6 months. Can't find a place. I want to make sure there's an equitable parking solution for the public on Southside before there's any further massive development. We all know more is coming there. And there's too much available parking that sits empty devoted to private entities all the time. As the city grows, I think that that problem's going to become worse as more and more of the site down by Bethlehem Steel develops, more and more large housing complexes come in. All of the big parking spots that are available currently are owned by hospitals or other big companies. There's nowhere to go, especially during Music Fest, as I'm sure everyone is aware. We have a lot of derelict buildings and vacant plots in town. They've been eyesores of this community. I'm very happy about the void, personally. Finally seeing something being done with that. I feel very strongly about addressing all that and helping the city move on from that kind of stuff. This is a beautiful town, and it deserves to look beautiful. In terms of our local government, I can see the time spent and the devotion required for this task, obviously. Everyone's here. There's a lot of people here this evening. However, I feel while council and others are seemingly more accessible than ever before, thankfully for this streaming, we're simply not meeting the voters where they are. General engagement is low and looks to draw only the most vocal within the community. I'm unsure that this addresses the real sentiment of the city or the general problems of a population who either feel their concerns would be unheard or that it would be futile to even try. When I go out and talk about the town, the things people care about are rarely discussed in these meetings, both at least that I've experienced, and I believe engaging the people in smart, direct, and easy-to-understand ways would pay better dividends for the city. I suppose the real question is, why do I think I should be on city council? My answer is that I think that people who know me would say that I'm a sincere, pragmatic, and honest person. I'm willing to fight passionately for what I believe in, and I have the temperament to be civil. I'm not interested in a career of politics or political advancement. I simply want what's best for my friends, family, loved ones, and this city. Before I finish, I did ask folks online if there was anything I could address for them here while I'm speaking in front of everyone, and I will keep my word. I was told that the Monocacy Creek sign on Main Street has been dangling out of place for about half of a year. And many folks messaged me that they're very upset with the way that UGI repaves the roads after fixing the water mains and gas maintenance. Causes a lot of potholes, as evidenced by my drive over here in front of Liberty. I'm sure we are all well aware of that. Anyway, thank you very much for your time and consideration and for all your service to the city. Thank you, everybody, for applying for this. It really speaks volumes about the quality of the people of this town. Anyway, thank you again. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. And another Michael's with us, Michael Alcohol, who I'm sure was taking notes on your... I'm sure Mr. Alcohol is taking notes on your comments tonight, too. We're going to move on to Mr. Todd Dietrich as our next applicant.
Good evening. I was really happy to see that we not only have 11 applicants, but each of us have different backgrounds and skills that could be employed by council. And yet we all have one thing in common. We care about Bethlehem, and we want to see it succeed. I myself have been an active volunteer in the community for many years, and the warm welcome that I received from the Downtown Bethlehem Association during a very rainy spring cleanup back in 2011 was one of the things that influenced me to buy a home here later that year. Over time, I've discovered that Bethlehem has myriad groups doing good things, and I've been fortunate enough to find some that I've given my time to. In addition to volunteering with fixtures in the city like Godfrey Daniels and Arts Quest, I also took it upon myself to try to help the community in my own small way. Back in 2015, I noted that while there have been some Bethlehem groups on social media, many were filled with a lot of complaints and people wishing things would just go back to the way they used to be, but very few had suggestions for how we could actually make things better. Seeing that I had the power to do something, I created the Friends of Bethlehem PA group on Facebook, initially with only one rule. If you're going to complain about something, you have to also suggest a way that we can fix it. That group now has nearly 11,000 members sharing about Bethlehem in a positive and constructive manner. My professional career has taken me across the United States, working with school districts implementing national school lunch program software, and I got to see the very real impact that poverty and hunger have on our nation, and how thoughtful programs can make a huge impact improving society. Later, my work with schools as they implemented financial management and human resources systems gave me firsthand experience with the decisions that go into balancing long-term obligations like pensions and capital projects, along with everyday services that also need to be provided without drastic tax increases. My current role as a senior project manager for an e-commerce software company has me working with clients up and down the Western Hemisphere, from small businesses looking to take their first step into selling online to large multinationals as they make the next big shift for their company in the online space. While I feel that my volunteer and professional experience make me a strong candidate for the vacancy on council, I also understand that no matter who is selected tonight, 10 people will leave not filling that role. It's my hope that every single person who applied, including whoever gets selected, will continue to find ways to help the community. Members of council, you have a very good problem because you have some really excellent candidates to choose from, and I'm sure this is a tough decision. Regardless of who is selected, there will be criticism and suppositions about why someone was chosen over someone else, but I know that City Council will be well served by whoever fills this role for the next 2 years. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Dietrich. Our next applicant is Ms. Wanda Lenix.
I am honored to be with you tonight. I am thankful that you will hear me out. I want to be a member of Bethlehem City Council for many, many reasons. But to boil it down to a few reasons, they are these. First, I think because of my many and different experiences in education, and in this city, my many different and many experiences, I could bring a different perspective to City Council. During my 44 years in education, as you have read, I taught at Brockle and at Nichman when they were junior high schools. I taught urban studies, how development impacted a city's shape, size, its people, its places, and things. Brockle was a family school for two generations of Enixes. It was a source of family pride. I taught the history of African Americans and civics at Liberty High School. And I had to know Bethlehem to bring it to school children. This I did for 11 years. I then went on to direct an affordable child care program, caring for children of our most vulnerable families. We kept 150 children, ages 1 to 10 years of age, in Allentown. Working with younger children gave me a perspective that I did not have at that time. It let me see a community's real value is how it impacts its most vulnerable people, its youngest, its oldest, its poor, and its sick. That work I did for 4 years, Volunteers of America Children's Center. I went on to teach courses undergraduate at Montclair in New Jersey, an award-winning teacher education program. I also taught grad students earning their master's. I taught a course called Education in the Inner City. I thought I'd tell you a little bit about Montclair, since I spent almost 30 years there. I had my students go out into the inner city and mentor homeless children who lived in shelters away from their families. I had my students take children who needed emotional support on visitations to zoos, to the museums. Or I would have them simply work with the children who needed help with their homework. While at the same time, my graduate students and I discussed the economics of the cities, the politics of the cities, housing issues, development dilemmas, and how they impacted education. I would tell you a little bit about the practical aspect of my work. I wasn't just a professor lecturing inside the classroom. I personally went to schools in Newark, Patterson, East Orange. The basis of much of my work was MSU's philosophy called critical thinking. And critical thinking is what I would bring to City Council. You read my thoughts about college towns, of which we are. You read my thoughts about mixed-use development. And Bethlehem's most crushing need is to develop creative, affordable, and entry-level housing, while we at the same time must act to protect real estate tax expenses for our marginalized people. Perhaps a restructuring of the real estate taxes so that our seniors could live out their lives in their homes. I said restructuring, and not necessarily foregoing necessary tax increases. How can anybody be against that? You read my thoughts about creating more opportunities for business and industry to have a skilled craft workforce. And despite my almost 30 years in Montclair, you see from my brief resume that I contributed to our beloved Bethlehem. Bethlehem is a great community. We are heading for a world heritage status. So let's get together so that we can recognize our diverse South Side and its rich ethnic untold history. Let's get together so that we can make Bethlehem an even greater community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Enix. Our next applicant tonight is Scott Hawk.
So it is my pleasure to be here tonight as a 30-year resident of town, and just a couple of words on why I wanted to do this. My history with Bethlehem goes back all the way to 1968. My father was the assistant manager of the Woolworths on Main Street, and when he comes back into town now, he lives in South Jersey, it's kind of a little mini tourist guide to show him what has changed. And I think everybody in this room understands the tremendous change that's happened in this city. Economic change, development, good and bad over the last 30 years. We moved to Hellertown in 1992, and I never worked in Bethlehem until last year. Because I worked in North Jersey, I was one of those people that, coming from Philadelphia after Bethlehem, I didn't want to live in New Jersey for all the same reasons folks are moving here from New Jersey. So if you're in this room and you moved here from New Jersey, I certainly sympathize with you. So we lived in Hellertown and did the commute. So very familiar with the problems of folks who are trying to stay in a place that they can raise their family. That was the main attraction for us. We raised three kids here, and after about 10 years, after living in Lower Saucon, we decided to move into town because we were always coming over that hill, always coming over Wyandotte Hill. And that was because my daughter was Irish dancing at the Sookville on Broad Street, and my two sons went to the Charter Arts High School. We moved into the historic district about 12 years ago and got heavily involved in the community, and that includes the Historic District Association, where my wife and I both held chair positions over the last year. In fact, I was at Docent in the last house tour that was very, very successful. Some of you, I'm sure most of you are familiar with that. I became an electorate here after I retired from Verizon. I became an election official and worked my first election right in this very building, because after years of volunteering and helping out in all the kids' things, I'm sure you all have, the scouts and the sports and things like that, I wanted to do something that was a little bit more adult and direct in the community. But while my kids were in high school, the charter high school was building a building on the south side, so I became the chairman of the foundation board. And that's when I first got involved in the south side politics, the south side historic district. I sat in front of many meetings as we got approval for the various signs, construction permits, and the like. And that taught me about the importance of economic development in areas of the city that were truly blighted and truly needed the investment. And of course, today, my son lives over on the south side. We do business with folks on the south side. So after leaving Verizon, I started my own consulting business so that I could work more local, and that's what brings me here today. Because now working and living here in Bethlehem, I think I'm able to spend some time with the board. I also should note that I don't represent anybody. I think I represent everybody. And that's really the main point. I ran the first diversity council at Verizon in 1996. Do you know why? Because the diversity council had no white people. And that's an important consideration when we're talking about diversity. It's not the color of our skin, it's our attitudes. And I'm about to say something that might astonish everybody in this room. I am a registered Republican, which makes me perhaps the most diverse person in this entire building. Thank you very much. Hope to see you all soon.
Thank you, Mr. Hall, for your comments this evening. Our next candidate tonight is Mr. John Marquette.
Good evening, Council. Thank you for offering me the opportunity to speak with you this evening. It was an honor to apply. And I put my heart and soul into the application package. Now, I'm going to skip four paragraphs and say that, in summary, I'm an old white male. And I think I represent, in many ways, historically, the past. I bring competence here, but when I look around the room, especially when I hear the words of one other person, Dr. Enix, I saw diversity that I do not represent. I believe in equality, and the way to equality is by the practice of equity. I would serve the city well, but how would my service contribute to the city's goals of diversity, equity, and inclusion? If another candidate could serve as well as I and can contribute to inclusion and equity, I urge you, members of City Council, to make that choice. Thank you for considering my application, and thank you for the time you said.
Thank you, Mr. Marquette. Our next candidate this evening is Allison Nickel.
I'm honored to be considered for a vacancy on Bethlehem City Council, and I'm really grateful for the chance to speak to you today. I'm grateful because these speeches represent one more step in the process of gathering information about all of those who've applied to serve our city in this capacity, a process which has been thorough but is not yet complete. I'm a pretty direct person, and so I feel the need to acknowledge that there has been reporting that council is under pressure to make a specific appointment tonight. But tonight offers a chance to get to know all of the candidates and their commitments better than we could express in our cover letters and our questionnaire responses. I hope everyone in this room and everyone watching on YouTube is making the most of that opportunity. So for those who don't know, my name is Allison Mickle, and I'm an anthropologist at Lehigh University. My research focuses on governance and representation, specifically in the cultural heritage sector. What that means is that I spend a lot of time meeting diverse communities and getting to know what's important to them, as well as attending meetings with municipal and national officials. I look for the successes, where people are hearing one another and collaborating, as well as the breakdowns, where there's some sort of disconnect between what stakeholders want versus the decisions that are getting made. I'd like to bring this experience to council, because Bethlehem residents should feel adequately and correctly represented by City Council. And in turn, council should be able to make decisions on the best information possible regarding residents' needs and priorities. I mostly do my research in Jordan, so I have immersed myself in community with people as varied as Bedouins living in caves and city-based entrepreneurs, like the person who built the first microbrewery in Jordan. In order to do this, I have to put aside any preconceived notions and value judgments and get to know people on their own terms. And I have to work. I can't assume that people want to meet me, want to come to my table, want to tell me their hopes for the future. That requires careful, intentional relationship building and outreach. I've brought the same care and commitment to meaningful, humble engagement to the Lehigh Valley in a number of roles in which I've served. As an instructor, I've collaborated with a number of our educational and cultural institutions like Historic Bethlehem, the NMIH, Wind Creek, the Steelworkers Union, and Liberty High School. As a leader in the racial justice organizations Power Lehigh Valley and Lehigh Valley Stands Up, I've built relationships with other nonprofits, with religious clergy, with lawmakers, and with people who don't belong to any of those visible groups because they have been historically and systemically excluded from them. Those are the people that I'm most hoping to represent by serving on City Council. My local involvements in my area of specialty have both taught me a lot about the real, tangible ways in which cities can make a difference for their residents. Affordable housing isn't actually an intractable problem. Instituting a real mandatory inclusionary zoning ordinance in Bethlehem would go a long way toward addressing it. We're not necessarily caught in a bind between satisfying developers and displacing families here in Bethlehem. Programs like community benefits agreements can help mediate and appease both parties. Even something like public safety, which seems like something that we can never all see eye to eye on, we can use evidence and data from other comparable cities to invest in programs that address poverty and health disparities, programs which reduce crime, make the city safer, and save us money, things we all actually want. Since I'd like to one day be sitting where you're sitting, I find myself thinking, what would I want to hear from a candidate tonight? You have to answer that question for yourselves, but for me, I'd want to hear that they're knowledgeable about city government. I'd want to hear that they're prepared to listen and learn about experiences different from their own. I'd want to hear that they recognize that oppression in Bethlehem and anywhere else is intersectional and complicated and systemic. I know council wants to make a historic nomination tonight. Nominating someone ready to do the really difficult work to uproot that systemic intersectional oppression, especially when it means challenging the status quo, that's historic. That's history in the making. I hope you see me as a candidate prepared and willing to do that, but I'm not the only one. My fellow applicant, Darian Colbert, has been at the forefront of racial justice organizing efforts for years. He's not just speaking at rallies, he's leading them, he's making them happen, and he's uplifting the youth who are behind them. My point is that you have a number of opportunities tonight to make a historic nomination to City Council, and I look forward to celebrating the appointment of the person best prepared to make tangible change for the most vulnerable in the city that we all love. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your comments. And our last candidate to invite to the lectern this evening is Anna Zavaruka. Is Anna here?
Yes.
Hello. Good evening, Mayor Reynolds, council members, and the public at large. First, I'd like to thank Mayor Reynolds and the council members for giving me this opportunity to present myself this evening. Secondly, I would like to thank the mayor and the council members for their dedication and participation in the governance of the city of Bethlehem. My name is Anna Zavaruka, and I'm seeking appointment to the Bethlehem City Council as I'm invested in the future of Bethlehem. I have lived in many different countries, cities, and boroughs, but the Lehigh Valley has been my main residence for the last 30 years. And I have made my home in West Bethlehem for the past 6 years. Bethlehem is a very special place. It has a long and deep history. The city is a beautiful tapestry that is rich with history and the transformation that we Americans have experienced since the founding of this nation. I believe there are few such cities on the East Coast and that have as much to offer and as much potential as Bethlehem. I'm seeking this position as an experienced public servant. I have been a teacher for over 25 years. I served on the North Catasauqua Borough Council, at which time I was the head of the Civil Service Commission. Additionally, I served on the Zoning Board for the Borough of Fountain Hill. The reason I seek this position is that it is important for me to take on civic duties, as I believe you get out of your community what you put into it. Through actively working for and supporting my community, I'm fulfilling my civic duties, something that I value very much. What quality does a councilperson have to have? I'm asked. I think it is important that a councilperson is open-minded. Through my extensive travels and a commitment to reading extensively, I know I can bring fresh perspectives to the council, as well as being open to perspectives others than mine. Another quality that a council person must have, especially in today's world, is inclusivity. The city of Bethlehem is a beautiful tapestry, but what makes it so is the diversity we have here and the many different cultures present in our community. And only by allowing all voices to be heard can the fabric of our city remain vibrant and enduring. As a council person, I would hope to utilize my language skills. I am fluent in French, Dutch, as well as proficient in Spanish, which I believe would be an asset for any council person in Bethlehem where more than 30% of the population speaks a Latin-based language. As a council person, I would focus on three main campaign platforms: affordable housing, more green space, and stimulate economic growth. I would want the council to work on grants that would help Bethlehem build affordable housing. I would look to take stock of what our housing inventory is, especially underused or vacant properties, and make them available to add to the city's housing inventory. Likewise with green spaces, preserve and improve what we have here at the same time as increase our green spaces. Finally, in terms of economic growth, I believe that we need to give small businesses as much support as possible through effective policies that will attract and sustain businesses in our community. When I was a council member for the Borough of North Catasauqua, I was head of the civil service, and I had extensive experience overseeing the budget and services provided, including the police recruitment program. This past experience will help me ensure that our valuable service have the resources they need while ensuring the city gets the most from the investments it makes. As a previous business owner, I feel enormously comfortable in roles of fiscal responsibility and garnered further expertise as a math teacher responsible for teaching finance courses. In conclusion, if I had the honor of being a member of this honorable council, I would be committed to the work necessary to help run a city with so much potential and so much history. I understand that the role of the council is to actively listen to its constituents and at times make hard decisions for long-term gains that will positively impact all community members. I also need to add that one of the candidates said there's only one of us who's going to be elected. But all the candidates who have spoken tonight, a very powerful group, and if somehow those who aren't elected can come together and put all that potential into Bethlehem, we obviously have a lot to work with. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Zabaruka. Are there any candidates that I may have missed this evening? Just want to make sure I give everyone an opportunity.
being done, we're going to continue on moving through tonight's agenda. Old business, any old business for members of council? Moving on to communications, communication 6A.
A memorandum from Robert Novotnek, Emergency Management Director, with an attached resolution authorizing the mayor to adopt an updated city emergency operations plan as required by the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Code.
And resolution 10A is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6B.
A memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution in agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of the Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearms at fair market value.
And resolution 10B is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6C.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, with an attached proposed resolution authorizing execution of a lease agreement between the city and Winning Touch Tennis, Inc. The lease premises is the Sand Island Tennis Facility at River Street. The term runs from March 1st, 2022 through October 31st, 2022. The lessee has the option to terminate by April 15th if they have not secured at least 100 members. In lieu of paying rent, the lessee would agree to make certain improvements to the facilities.
And resolution 10C is on the agenda tonight. And communication 6D.
A memorandum from Christina Roseberry, Housing and Community Development Administrator, requesting council to consider records destruction resolution for the Community Economic Development Department records listed in the exhibit. For the Municipal Records Retention Act, destruction of the records is permissible.
And a resolution will be on the February 15th agenda. Reports. I have nothing for council tonight in terms of reports. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, President Colon. We have several reports. I would start by turning to our police chief, Chief Cott, who I asked to report on a situation that occurred last week that I thought was a story that needed to be told. So I would start by Chief Cott.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, for asking me to share this information with not only City Council, but everyone here as well, and watching on YouTube. Last week, on January 25th, members of the Bethlehem Police Department were dispatched to the 400 block of Hay Street for a domestic issue between two individuals. Upon arrival on scene, our officer made contact with one of the parties in his vehicle and was able to positively confirm his identity. The male was extremely cooperative until the female officer was able to confirm that a PFA, maybe a protection from abuse order, was in play. When attempting to find out the status of the other individual that was involved, the male in the vehicle proceeded to try to flee from the officer. While doing so, that individual drove his vehicle into a telephone pole, causing significant damage to not only his vehicle, but putting his vehicle in a precarious situation over on Sullivan Street, tangled in brush and a fence. Our officers responded and attempted to make contact with the male who had proceeded to take a knife and hold it against his throat. Our officers retreated a safe distance and began to communicate with the male through the skills that they acquired through various trainings that we have been sending our officers to. And throughout this incident, approximately 20 officers from the Bethlehem Police Department arrived on scene and were able to secure the location to make sure that passerbyers weren't in a situation where they could be injured, where they were able to maintain communication with the individual who they could clearly see was in crisis and in need of assistance. These officers did an outstanding job in freezing temperatures, communicating with the individual, and having it come to a successful, peaceful resolution where the male was able to put down the weapon, exit the vehicle, and peacefully surrender to the officers who were able to have that individual get into contact with city paramedics and be taken to the hospital for medical care. This is just one of the many incidents that our officers and our social worker, our paramedics, our fire department handle on a regular basis. Some of the other incidents that may not have caused more attention or notice would be on the first officers did the exact same thing within a house, peacefully talking to an individual that was involved in a domestic with a knife. Again, later in the month, where an individual that dialed a suicide prevention hotline, which later dialed the Bethlehem Police Department and asked us for a welfare check, our officers were able to go out and talk for hours through a door to the individual who eventually opened it and allowed them to help get him the care he needed. Our officers attend various trainings throughout the year. There are a number of trainings involving verbal de-escalation, Eastern PA Regional Crisis Intervention Team and Suicide Training, Introduction to Crisis Intervention Training through Northampton County, Crisis Negotiation Seminar, Mental Health First Aid for Juveniles, Interview and Interrogation, High Impact Supervision, Basic SWAT, Critical Decision Making for Complex Incidents. Again, thank you, Mr. Mayor, for providing us the opportunity to showcase some of the outstanding work of our officers.
Thank you, Chief Cott. And I know we have had a lot of conversations about how we respond to these type of incidents, and these are things that we're constantly talking about. Later on this year, we're going to be talking about how well our social worker is working within the department, some of our further ideas. One of the things that I was most aware of as far as this situation was concerned was Ms. Santora and myself had gone to a meeting later on in that day, and one of the officers had come, you know, only shortly after this incident had occurred. And, you know, was part of this meeting, didn't need to be, didn't search for any type of recognition or whatever. And then I started asking about how things were going. And he shared this particular incident with me, and he could have not come to the meeting, not been engaged, and things like that. And, you know, I feel very strongly that there are always things that we can work on. We have a lot of ideas. Chief Cott and I talk about this every day, about the things that we're doing well, things that we can do better. But this was an incident where I believe that the work of the department helped to save this individual's life. Chief Cott left out some of the details as far as like where it was going at one point with people in the neighborhood and things like that, and I thought it was something that needed some public recognition, Chief, so thank you for that. At this point, I would turn to our Director of Equity and Inclusion, Janine Santoro, to give a report as well.
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me? First of all, I want to say it's a pleasure to be with all of you here tonight. I'm also really grateful that we got to hear from all these wonderful candidates for City Council. Two of the things that I heard a lot come from them is this need for engagement and this need to reflect our history. And so one of the things that our administration is going to be doing is communicating with individuals through our social media through something called Bethlehem Corner. This is going to be a way for us to communicate very openly about some of our internal things that we have going on, so things that are going on within City Hall, our departments, but also a way for us to engage out in the community and to engage with people. This could be businesses, this could be people that are telling us about their work, it could be nonprofit, but it could also be people that are unveiling the history of Bethlehem that is not part of the dominant narrative. So you'll see it just came out today. Our first Bethlehem Corner was with Ray Levy, who's here tonight, and who talked about the Esther Emily African American Heritage Center. And so part of this is just about trying to let people know that there is a full history of Bethlehem. It's not everything that you might find at the library or on the bookcases, you know, at the Meridian Bookstore. It's a history that is oral history. It's a history that we find is passed down.
We have some folks here tonight that spoke about that history very coherently, and so that's going to be part of this administration. Is we understand that the need for cultural preservation, for historical preservation, and we want to do that in a way that shows that history is not just what's happened in the past, that there's a clear thread that runs to the present. And so we understand also that today is the first day of Black History Month. We are deliberate with our posts this month about our Black history, but we also know that it is not just this month that we'll be doing that. This is going to be part of our culture moving forward, of amplifying all of our stories throughout the year. So we hope that you look out for that, and that you engage with us in that way as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Santora. And a couple things as far as engagement is concerned. One of the things that we've talked a lot about that we'll be talking about in the next couple weeks publicly is what that kind of pandemic recovery needs engagement is going to look like. Ms. Collins and her department and Ms. Santora and our office have been doing a lot of research as far as looking at platforms, looking at different things as far as when we can do community meetings and so on and so forth, to be able to reach out to our community to hear from everybody as far as what we need to put our resources towards the most as we come out of the pandemic. So, and that includes affordable housing, includes a whole bunch of things that we're going to talk about in the next several weeks. Just two more comments real quick, Mr. Colon, before we move on. Is, I did, as someone who sat on city council through several of these appointments, I can tell you, and I don't know if any of the six members are going to tell you this, is that this is definitely one of the harder parts of the job, because there are so many qualified candidates. And I think everybody that spoke tonight, if city council, and this sounds like a cliche, and you might not believe it from them, but you can believe it from me, is that if they could pick, eight or nine of you, they would do that. Because of just the breadth of experience that the people in this room are bringing. And, one of the things that we've talked about a lot is, and, we had gotten the copies of the letters of interest and the resumes from the city clerk's office and talked about, the hope, and this continues, and this is an open invitation for anybody that put their name in. We hope that we can find a place for you on one of our authorities, boards, or commissions. Because we have a lot of authorities and boards commissions that need people to attend the meetings, be part of the grind of city government, be part of the grind of, the different work that makes our community special. So I can say that as, somebody, it's a promise that if people are interested in that, we have your information. We may reach out to you. Please reach out to us as well. There's different appointment times. Not everything is up this week. Sometimes things are up in a couple of months or different things like that. But I want everybody to know that we are committed to trying to find a space for you. And I think there's a transition to that. And this is something that doesn't have to do with any candidates, but it came up implicitly in one of the comments from one of the public comment speakers. And I just felt like I needed to say something. I think that we often get in the trap of Bethlehem, of almost this like competition of experience, that somehow how long you've lived in the city somehow makes your experience more valuable than others do. And as I said, there are eight or nine people here that should be on city council. But it's not a competition. And people that have been living here for a year or 10 years or 20 years, and I'm talking somewhat about the six people up here that have all six of them. When I voted for them, I didn't make the decision about how long they were living in the city of Bethlehem. I didn't say, I'm going to vote for this person because she's been here 4 years versus this person that's been here 15 years. And I think that's a trap that this city has gotten in for far too long. And it is a problem. I tell the stories that my parents are from New Jersey, and they bought a house in 1979. And my mom and dad would joke around about how it didn't matter how many Little League games they coached or how many PTA meetings they attended or anything like that, that if they said to somebody they're from New Jersey, there was a certain response from some people. And my parents were, my father had a doctorate and my mom had a master's degree. And they were upper middle class, white, privileged people. And they had to deal with that. And that's nothing compared to what's going on in this country now. And it's not going to go in Bethlehem. It's ridiculous to me that we are still in this kind of implicit competition about somehow if you've been here for 20 years, that makes your experience more valuable than 17. No one's experience is more valuable than anybody else's is. And it's one of the things that we talk about every single day. We don't have one Bethlehem identity. Janine talked about how we're trying to tell different stories that have not been told. And I am absolutely a product of that traditional Bethlehem identity, as far as growing up and being a Moravian and going to Moravian College and all those type of things. And there's nothing wrong with that. But we don't aspire to one identity. We don't ask people to fit into one identity. And what we try to do is build institutions that welcome people from different places. So if you've been here, so affordable housing is a problem for you if you've been here for 2 months or if you've been here for 20 years. These issues are problems no matter how long you've been here. And we have to start by acknowledging that as a city and as a community, we have not always been as welcoming on either, as many of the speakers eloquently talked about tonight, either when it comes to race or identity. And we could go back and we could talk about how those decisions of people 100, 120, 140 years ago created some of the systemic inequities. We get to City Hall every day and we try to talk about these inequities, try to plan to fix them, and that's what we do as an administration. That's why people, that's what the people in this room are about, and whatever decision City Council makes tonight, and like I said, there's 8 or 9 people that are fantastic, and I think that, you know, I know who I would vote for. I'm not going to share that because I don't know if that would help or hurt the person at this point, but I think it's a situation that as a city, we need to get past whether or not someone has lived here for a couple years or not. And I specifically am talking about the 6 people up there. None of them are a better council person than the other one because they grew up in New Jersey or New York or Connecticut or Illinois or Florida. It doesn't matter. It comes down to whether or not they want to serve their community and whether or not they value people's experience. And the 6 of those people do up here, and whoever the 7th person is going to do that as well. Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Chief Cobb, Ms. Santoro, and Mayor Reynolds for your comments. Moving on through the agenda, we have no ordinances tonight for final passes, no new ordinances. We get to our resolutions. Clerk, please read Resolution 10A.
Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor, J. William Reynolds, is hereby authorized to adopt the City of Bethlehem Emergency Operations Plan dated February 1st, 2022, which has been developed to outline basic operations and procedures to be implemented in the event of an incident, either man-made or natural, that requires a coordinated response. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon.
Any discussion on the resolution? The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Resolution passes 6-0. Clerk will read Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of a city-issued handgun to Keen Knappenberger, a retired city police officer. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon.
Any discussion?
Mr. Colon.
Ms. Quita?
Thank you. I will be voting no on this tonight. I want to say that this has nothing to do with Captain Knappenberger or his service, which has been honorable. This is a vote of principle. I'm opposed in principle to the government facilitation of the purchase of a deadly weapon to a civilian. I have sat in the audience here over the last several years and listened as these votes came up, and they were all unanimous to transfer these weapons. So I just wanted to open the conversation about why we do this when there are enough handguns owned by civilians, I think, to last a long time in the city. So I will be voting no on this, but I will also be voting no on all of them. So again, it's not about Captain Knappenberger or his service. It's not about any individual person. It is about the principle. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kwiatek. Ms. Wall.
Thank you, Councilwoman Kwiatek, for your comments. I also had questions about this policy, and I thank you, Chief Cott, for taking the time to explain to me. And it occurs to me that if I have questions, if we have questions, others may have questions as well. And I wondered if you might be willing to take a moment tonight to explain this policy to us in greater detail, just to help us understand.
Absolutely.
Hello again. So this is a fairly standard practice that occurs across the country when first responders, in regard to police officers, sheriffs, wildlife and game commission officers, serve honorably for a designated amount of time and are retiring in good standing. Many municipalities or agencies enable them to purchase their service weapon upon retirement. Doing some quick record checking, I was able to discover that our department has engaged in this practice since 2010. And for the past couple of years, due to the increase in retirements and turnover, 2018 we had 4 officers that purchased their service weapon, 2019 6, 2020 7, and 2021 another 6. There are various reasons for why our officers want to purchase that service weapon. I can't say one covers all of it because each person's an individual. There is a sentimental value, I'm sure, for some people. 20 plus years of putting on a badge, putting on the uniform, and having that as a tool in which you may have to utilize to save someone's life or save your own life. For some people, that could be a reason to want to purchase that. For others, if they are someone that wants to have that and put it in a gun safe or just have that as a memento of their time here, it's just extremely difficult to go over all the different reasons that an individual would want that to kind of commemorate their service with the city. A little specific background about BPD's policy. So as I mentioned, the quick record check, it's been in place since 2010. With third class city code, we're able to do it as long as the firearm is sold at fair market value. Now, how do we come to that? We're able to reach out to firearm suppliers and dealers in the Lehigh Valley in the area to find out how much a new firearm that is similar to the one that our officers are issued costs, and then speak to them further about a used firearm. So the Glocks that our officers are issued, a new model, would be somewhere between $500 to $600. Because of the training that we require here in the city of Bethlehem, which is so much more than what the state requires for an officer to qualify with their service pistol, the weapon has been utilized a number of times throughout an officer's career, as well as exposed to the elements when the officers are out in the rain, sleet, snow, severely hot music fest weather. So that affects the fair market volume value as well, and that's how we came to that $300. The transfer does not just occur by an individual coming in and paying with cash or a credit card or a check. It has to be done at a firearms dealer. And that's done for a number of reasons. It's the law, but also it enables the firearms dealer to conduct a PICS check. So just because someone's an officer does not mean that they're not exempt from going through the PICS check that will show the firearms dealer that they are someone that is permitted to own a firearm. And to those wondering, well, wouldn't you know that in the first place? You would hope we would know that. Yes, but there are a number of times where an individual may retire, and by the time the request to purchase the firearm comes before council, is voted on, that's extremely important in general, is making sure individuals that should own firearms or I'm sorry, that shouldn't own firearms aren't able to have them. So all our officers would go through that pitch check as well. If our officers did not purchase the firearm, which is an option, that firearm, again, because of the wear and tear that it's put through, would be traded back in to the firearms supplier. And then that firearm supplier would be able to sell it to an individual that they choose, or they can sell it to a wholesale supplier, such as Army and Navy. And anyone would be able to go in and purchase the firearm through that wholesale supplier. I understand that this is a very polarizing topic, and people feel very, very strongly about it. I know that our officers are extremely well trained with not only going down to a range and firing at a non-moving piece of paper, but what I consider to be so much more important, when not to use that firearm. What is behind where you're pointing that firearm, where you may have to fire that firearm. That's something that we take great pride in, is doing that training beyond what is required and really having an individual know how to safely handle that service weapon. I'm trying to think if...
And just to add to that, Ms. Kwiatek, you probably remember a couple years ago with our previous chief, I had asked whether or not we could take the dollars from the sale of these and put them towards some type of anti-gun violence cause, which wasn't done under our former police chief, and he's no longer here. But I think that it's, when you play the situation out, if it's a situation of what do we do, what's the value of selling it to him and taking that $300 and adding it and doing something anti-gun violence, or also the symbolic value of, like, should we be selling guns to police officers? I think that that's one that comes down to your thought. I know if I was, there's a lot of things that I would personally value if I was a police officer as far as my sentimental things that I would take with me. It's not my place, you know, as far as what someone else values or what they close as part of their identity. But if it is the will of counsel to necessarily say that this is not something by which taking that money and putting it towards anti-gun violence versus the symbolic value, as far as that's concerned, it is not something that I'm going to disagree with.
And that's a great point. The funds received from the purchase go into an escrow account. And historically, that money is in that escrow account to purchase new firearms for new officers, replacement parts in case there's any malfunctions, equipment we may need for our range. But those are conversations that Mr. Mayor and I have had about organizations such as Ceasefire, PA, and others as well. Also, another thing that came to mind is the service weapon that they're purchasing is the pistol. We do not sell anything else to our officers that an individual would not be able to purchase at a firearm dealer. That is the only thing that is being offered. And again, it's for a member in good standing that has spent 20 plus years in the service of the individuals in our city, in our community. Any other questions?
Thank you, Chief. Did you have anything else?
Thank you, Chief Cobb. Thank you.
Ms. Leon?
Actually, you answered one of my questions already. I know that we've spoken before, and my lived experience is military, so I very much understand how something that could just be part of your uniform actually becomes more symbolic of the sacrifice that you've made or time spent away from family. And I was just wanting to clarify that it really is only for people who are retiring that they buy their service pistols?
Yes. Okay. So if there was an individual that spent 6 years in the service of the Bethlehem Police Department and decided that this field is not for them, but they wanted to purchase their service firearm, they would not be able to.
and apples to oranges. I'm talking about boots and a cover, not a glock when it comes to my personal experience. But I was wondering, and maybe this is a question for Chief Aki, if the fire department, do you guys do anything like that, where you keep your helmet or your boots? Or
we allow helmets.
Helmets? Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council or comments? Dr. Van Wert?
Oh, thank you. You've given me a lot to think about. I've traditionally voted for this because in all pragmatism, it seems like if you didn't give them their weapon, they'd probably go buy one anyways. But I think I would be much more comfortable with this if we could donate the proceeds to Ceasefire PA, like batch it annually or something like that. Is that something that is underway as a potential?
I don't want to speak for Chief Cott because this was not under her leadership, but I'm disappointed that it didn't happen a couple years ago when I first brought it up at City Council, and it was something that was told us in the minutes, if you go back to the meetings, that it was going to be done. This is not on Chief Cott because it is something that we have talked about as far as what the best use would be, whether or not it would be going to organizations such as Ceasefire, whether or not it would be anti-gun violence events or anti-gun violence education. We had not talked about that, but you can rest assured that whatever dollars there would be is that we would see that it would be going to a place that would be dedicated to anti-gun violence. But to go back to my comment before to Councilwoman Kwiatek, I do believe personally that's a balancing act between the symbolism of it versus the value of whatever that $300 is. And I think that's up to City Council, but whatever City Council decides, it's not going to be a disagreement for me.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? I'll turn to Ms. Francie Smith and then Ms. Kwiatek.
I just had a quick question. Do most officers, when they retire, purchase their handgun? I mean, I know you might not know, specifically, but I'm just thinking offhand.
Honestly, I think it depends. It really does. Kind of like the reasons why and the sentimental value why somebody would want it. Recently, with the amount of individuals that we have had retiring, just looking at the numbers in front of me, it would seem that statistically, yes, more individuals are taking advantage of it than not.
Okay. And prior to 2010, then, when they didn't purchase, they weren't able to, did the guns go back to the wholesaler then? Is that how the process was back previous? You may not know, but...
The records that I was able to find with my staff, we were able to find evidence that the service weapons were being bought back till 2010. I have not yet trekked down into the basement and to go down into the other records. I can look into that.
No, I was just wondering. That's fine. I'm just curious. No. Thank you. Thank you for this information. Contrary to what some people in the public may say, I am the daughter of a police chief and the aunt of three nephews who are in law enforcement. So I'm familiar with this, and I understand the sentimental value of the handgun to the officers. At the same time, personally, I am an anti-gun. I'm concerned about the gun violence in our country, certainly. So I think I thank Councilman Kwiatek for bringing up a good point that we could have some. I think we had some good dialogue about it, and I do agree with Dr. Van Wert and Mayor Reynolds that, if we could give some of the funds towards an anti-gun kind of program, I would certainly be all about that. But thank you for this information. It was good dialogue.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Yes, and thank you for everybody engaging in this conversation tonight around this. One of the things that you did say that did concern me was the unsold guns going back, because that does mean that we are potentially putting a gun in the hands of someone who could use it for bad things, and it's our gun. And so I would like to suggest that we have a conversation in the future, perhaps at a committee meeting or in some other way, about that procedure and whether or not that needs to be looked at. And if there's something else we could do with those that are not sold to the retiring officers. So thank you very much for the information. I do appreciate it. It doesn't change my vote, but I do appreciate it.
Any other questions or comments from members of council?
Mr. Clone, I just wanted to add that I don't believe that going back to 2010, councils voted on these. I believe it's only been a recent thing in the past couple of years. So it was not something by which from 2010 City Council was voting on without having this conversation. I think for a while it was thought that it didn't need to come to City Council and that at some point it was determined, which was when City Council had that first conversation, whatever that was 3 years ago or whatever it might be at this point. So I just wanted to make that clear that we weren't voting on these from 2010 without having this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. I'll just say a couple of brief remarks. And to Mr. Reynolds' point, I don't have the minutes from all those meetings or my personal calendar handy, but I do remember the first time this came before council, it was Mr. Reynolds when he sat up there that questioned, had this been a practice of the city because these resolutions were not coming before City Council, this policy was going on within the administration in whatever function. I appreciate Chief Cott's background of what happens related to it's only for officers who are retiring, what would happen to that weapon otherwise if it was not purchased. And I think that because it's such a, in the single digits, give or take, of occurrences, we have adequate time following tonight. I know the administration's all of about a month on the job, so they're still figuring a lot of things out, but I think there's opportunity to further these discussions between now and potentially either the next time this resolution similar to this one is before council or at the next council meeting, I'll have an opportunity to announce our committees. So if that's something that the Public Safety Committee chooses to hold a meeting about, that'll fall on the members of the committee. But I'll be supporting this tonight as I have. I understand the significance for the individual officers and the sentimental value of their service weapons, something they've dutifully carried throughout their career. But I think, like I said, that there is a lot of reason to have some of the conversations that are brought up tonight, and we have adequate opportunity, whether through a committee meeting or the mayor sharing with us the administration's ideas by the time this comes before council again for what could be done with those dollars. So thank you, Chief Cott, for your feedback and the background tonight. Any other comments from members of council? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 5-1. The clerk will read Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute a lease agreement and other necessary documents with the Winning Tennis Coach, Inc. for the operation of the tennis facility located at Sand Island at River Street. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Colon.
Before I turn to discussion, I want to see if there was anyone from the administration that would just be able to give us a little bit of background on what this lease entails and the plan for the tennis court.
Thank you, Mr. Alcohol.
As most of council are probably aware, the tennis courts at Sand Island are somewhat of a special type of surface. They require a little more intensive annual maintenance and operations. Especially in recent years, we've had challenges of staffing the tennis courts. More recently, last year, that was even more difficult for various reasons, including the pandemic. We've also had some maintenance issues there. The facilities there are getting older and they could use some additional upgrade. So what this proposal, what this agreement is for is it's a short-term lease. It's just for this upcoming season. It's sort of going to be used as a way to evaluate whether this is something we want to continue to do long-term or go back to the way we manage the court as is now. It'll help us in many ways. It'll help solve the challenge of staffing the upcoming season, which we think we're going to have even more difficulties with. The leasing, it does include the leasee making some improvements specifically to the locker rooms at the facilities. They are a reputable outfit that do this for a living, so I think the management and the running of the programs and the services will also be improved. And if we decide to continue, we'll
we will possibly change the arrangement, if that makes sense, depending on the experience that we have. And if we do not continue with it, it is budget neutral for this upcoming season. But at the end of the day, if we don't move forward with it, we'll still have gotten some improvements out of the process.
Thank you, Mr. Alcohol. Any comments or questions from members of council? Ms. Quick.
First of all, I wanted to thank Recreation Director Evans for giving me very thorough answers to my questions. I sent her 7 questions, and she gave me lots of data and information. And I can see that this is I think it's a good experiment, a good pilot to see if it will work out. The concerns that I had were about accessibility to the courts by the public, she felt that even with some of the courts have become pickleball courts also, and in the other parks, kind of reducing the number of courts we have that are exclusively, and of course this is our only hard true court surface in the city. So I was a little concerned about that. She felt that there would be adequate resources for people to be able to partake of tennis in at the other parks, and specifically people who have in the lease, it states that if you have a tennis instructor who is not a tennis instructor of the lessee, you can't have your lessons on those courts with that instructor. So that was, again, one of my concerns. But even given that, the potential for the upgrades to the locker rooms and some the staffing issues and things, as you noted, I think on balance, it's a worthwhile pilot. So thank you to her for answering my questions.
Thank you, Ms. Quitek. Any other questions, comments? Dr. Van Wert?
I have a few questions, and some of this is really put against the highlight of our pretty intensive discussions a few years ago about the same financial difficulties that the golf course was in. Now, the golf course is a little bit different than our tennis courts. The golf course is in its enterprise fund, and it has its own kind of bookkeeping and bottom line and investment from the city. And we've been putting a lot of money into the golf course. We've been getting grants from the county under economic development. We've been buying them mowers. I would argue that it's not fully self-sustaining yet, but it's clearly an important part of Bethlehem. And where the tennis courts are a little bit more diffuse, but this is the main cluster of tennis courts that the city owns, right?
Yeah, we have others, obviously, but yeah.
Okay. And one of the reasons we opted not to go with the lease for the golf course, one of the main arguments was the loss of control that we would have over the quality of the courts, of the courses. And yet this is something that we're seeding readily here. Now I understand this is a tough time and it's hard to maintain those courts. And it's better to have, in my mind, a privately leased outfit maintaining the courts and having it be used than them falling in utter disrepair and not being able to be used at all. But I just had some concerns about the track record of the lessee. I don't know anything about them. Have they done this? Where else have they done this?
Yeah, I mean, we've had extensive discussions with them. Ms. Evans had done research on them. I can get you more specifics as to exactly where they've done it, but the feedback that we've gotten is that they're very reputable, they're fast operation, and
right,
we're confident that they'll run a good operation there.
I, too, was worried about the accessibility part, and I was unclear if there's any current of the last year's kids programs there, that, and would those be continued if there were children's summer programs there?
In the lease, we spell out certain programs that will be run, that would be required to be run there.
I read the lease pretty thoroughly.
Okay. I can follow up on that and see specifically if that came up or if
I just would
that
hate to have a program that's there and lose that access for those kids to the courts, because that was another argument that we didn't want to lease out the golf course because a lot of kids use the golf course. So I'm just trying to be consistent in how we determine the use of our public facilities.
There was definitely an effort to try to ensure to the extent possible and reasonable
providing very similar accommodations to the users at that facility as currently exists. But I'll specifically inquire about the,
And my last question, who would be responsible for actually looking at the comp fees for what, how they set their fees so that we know that this is something that's really, truly still accessible to the public? Like, who's going to be looking at?
We obviously, the recreation director and myself would look at that, and it's called out in the lease that it has to be, you know, competitive with local options.
Okay, I'm somewhat reassured by the short-term nature of this. And so will you all be sitting down in October to say, like, was it a success, was it a failure, where can we do it better?
Yes, as I mentioned, that's one of the main things, is it's a short-term arrangement that will be evaluated. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to add to that, Mr. Alcohol. Did we open last year or no?
Yes.
Well, we did open last year, but was it delayed? Is that what it was? Or
we had difficulty staffing.
Yeah, and it was just, it was when Mr. Alcohol and Ms. Evans had come and had this conversation and talked about just the previous difficulties with the particular maintenance that is needed as far as the court, as far as expertise with current city workers and things like that, the struggles in the past, and also, as you said, the short-term nature. For myself, when I was in council, part of the reticence about long-term leases with golf course was when you look at other golf courses that become privatized, they don't put the money into it, which then when you get the asset back after 10 or 15 years, you have a depreciated asset. One of the things that was one of the first questions I asked to Mr. Alcohol and Ms. Evans was like, what are they doing for us this year that we don't get back a depreciated asset? And what I had heard as far as the investments that they were making into the infrastructure is not things that you can take away, whether or not it's the bathrooms and other things there. And for me, I looked at it as a not risky investment for 1 year, considering some of the problems. And then 6-7 months from now, we come back and have this, or you know, at the end of the fall, we come back and have the same kind of internal conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council?
Just a question. It says if they don't have at least 100 memberships by April 15, the lease will be terminated. Do you have any idea on the cost of a membership?
I don't recall off the top of my head what the exact numbers are. We did look at them, but your concern being if they.
Well, I'm also wondering about, I guess, just the usage and accessibility for the public in general, that, you know, it looks like it's going to be private memberships and it's going to be costly, and are there scholarships available, especially like for children maybe who...
I specifically, you know, we had that discussion, and the numbers that they were throwing around in terms of what the cost would be looked very competitive to us with other local costs, and they were very confident that they will achieve the required membership to move forward, but of course this has to be technically put in the lease in the unlikely event that doesn't happen. And at the same time, we're making arrangements that if it does fall through, which we don't expect, we're highly confident it'll move forward, that we'll be prepared to operate the course like we always have. We think it's going to be very tough, but we're not sitting waiting around for, you know, we don't want to be surprised at the last minute and not be able to react to it.
Okay. And I would just ask again, I guess, in the instance of equity for all that we consider, you know, this year or at least next year, if we can't do it this year, looking at scholarships for those that, you know, would like to participate in the tennis program but can't afford to.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Thank you, Mr. Alcoa. I don't have any questions other than just a couple brief comments that I will be supporting this tonight. I think it's a good opportunity to partner up with someone being Winning Touch Tennis. Hope they live up to that name. And that as they manage our facility, I'm not the biggest tennis player in the world, but I do know last summer there were a lot of conversations within the community about the future of Sand Island due to the maintenance and upkeep that is necessary. And Mr. Alcohol, what's the name of that surface there at Sand Island?
Hartrue.
Because it is a unique, uncommon, special surface, a little bit more special attention goes into it than Westside Park or over on Ilk's Mill. So I understand there's
you speak leagues there or membership to play just to kind of try to break even as a city. So I understand that the lease is tied to their membership, there are the number of members or usage of the golf course, and they're already bringing a good reputation. I'm familiar with them to a degree because they have a facility in East Allentown off of Union Boulevard that some of the members of the community who play have referenced in my discussions with them. So I think this short-term lease gives us ample opportunity to take advantage of the investment they're willing to put into it. We're guaranteed to at least get that out of the partnership and then reevaluate at the end of the season where we are. So I'll be definitely supporting this tonight, and thank you, Mr. Alcohol.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments before I call the roll? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10D.
Certificate of appropriateness under the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature and Bethlehem Ordinance is hereby granted for 508 East 4th Street to remove all roofing materials on the main roof and front porch, excluding rubber roof on the rear first floor, and install one roll of ice shields at the bottom. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon.
Any discussion? I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Now we are to the end of our agenda. I appreciate everyone's time you spent with us tonight as you observe some of the less exciting city business. But now we'll move on to agenda item 10E. So just a little bit of background as we move into the appointment tonight. So after having heard from some of the candidates earlier, we're going to move on to that filling of the city council vacancy, which I mentioned earlier was created when Mayor Reynolds had to resign from council to take office as the mayor. Whomever is appointed this evening will fill the rest of Mayor Reynolds' term that he when he left council, and that will be until January 2nd of 2024. So they will serve the remaining balance of this year and next year. Before we get started, I'm going to summarize some of the process for filling the vacancy. First, I'll make some general comments on the selection process and then open the floor for general discussion and input among council members if any other council members have any comments. Following our general discussion, each member of council will have the opportunity to nominate one or more candidates to fill the vacancy. Any individual member of council can nominate as many applicants as they choose, and not every member of council has to nominate someone. So an applicant only has to be nominated one time. After we close nominations, the clerk will read the list of nominees, and we will then hold a roll call vote where each member will state the name of the one individual who they wish to vote for to fill the vacancy. We may need additional rounds of voting depending on how the first votes play out, but the process will be if any single candidate receives four votes from members of council or more, that candidate wins the council vacancy. If a candidate receives three votes and those three votes are more than any other candidate, then that individual will win the election and be the new council member. In the event of a 3-3 tie, we can have further discussion as members of council, or I can then turn to the mayor to be the tie-breaking vote only in the event of a 3-3 tie. If no candidate receives at least three votes during the first round, we'll take it back to the floor for debate, and after that debate, we will hold additional roll call votes as needed. So that's just a little background on when we're counting the votes once we all start voting. If for some reason no candidate is selected tonight, the Northampton County Court of Common Pleas will fill the vacancy in the event that we can't agree on a candidate this evening. If a nominee receives sufficient votes, their name will be incorporated into the blank that's listed in the materials for tonight's meeting for agenda item 10E for that resolution. The clerk will then read the appointment resolution incorporating the name of the individual selected for that successful candidate, and then we will hold a separate roll call vote on that resolution. So we'll vote on who we want to fill the vacancy, and then we'll actually have a vote on the resolution with their name in there. Assuming someone is appointed tonight, the appointee will be sworn into office at the beginning of our very next council meeting, which will be February 15th, and will begin voting on legislation that same night. The new council member will serve out their partial term until a successor is sworn in, as I had mentioned. If the new council member decides to run for election in 2023, they have the opportunity to be elected to a full four-year term on city council. So before we move into nominations, I'll open the floor to general discussion amongst council members. I just wanted to start with a couple comments to the process before I turn to all my colleagues up here. So first, I just want to thank everybody that put their name forward, whether they were here tonight, whether they spoke, whether they withdrew their name, whether they spoke for another candidate. It doesn't matter. It takes a lot of courage and opening yourself up to this process to put your name forward. Everyone's cover letter and resumes were made public. Everyone shared a lot with us individually tonight before everyone in this room this evening. Open themselves up to feedback, open themselves up to potential scrutiny, but really, I appreciate everyone's comments being open to this process. I had the very fortunate opportunity of speaking to just about everyone who applied one-on-one, if for nothing else, to touch base, because one of the things that I shared, and to anyone who follows city politics for the last 8 years or so, I personally went through this process two times myself. I had applied for two council vacancies as they had opened up when Mayor Donchez resigned from council to become mayor, and then when there was another council opening shortly thereafter. And between those two vacancies, when I put in, I got a cumulative of 0 votes from members of council to be appointed to city council. And then I put my name on the ballot twice, and here I am. So I share that just to encourage everybody that just because you may not be selected tonight, doesn't mean that you won't have the opportunity to serve on city council should you pursue a council seat in next year's election or in future elections when the community gets to cast their vote. Because while I appreciate Mayor Reynolds' words earlier during her comments about the difficult decision we have to make, this is actually a little bit harder than election day, because on election day you always get to choose 3 or 4 names when you vote for city council, and tonight we only get to choose 1 name. And as I said, I cannot be more sincere in my appreciation for everyone who put their name forward, and equally sincere when I say I encourage everyone who so felt the need to be a part of this process tonight to take time to consider if this is something you wish to do in the future, and you have adequate opportunity in the next coming months leading up to next year or any other odd number of years when we always have our municipal elections, that this does not have to be the end of that opportunity. That being said, before we open up to nominations, I will be supporting Ms. Wandel and Enix tonight when it is time for us to cast our votes. While I appreciate everyone who came out tonight and spoke, whether it's for Ms. Enix or for other members of council, I had obviously opportunity to speak to everyone briefly and review everyone's materials that they had submitted. And I've known Ms. Enix. We met prior to me ever sitting up here. It was in the audience in this very room where she and I had an opportunity to meet and engage each other about 8 years ago, probably the first time I got passed up for a council seat by council. And ever since then has been someone who I've known in a certain capacity and had a great deal of respect for, and I've developed a lot of respect for other applicants who I did not know prior to this process, but who I agree with other individuals who commented tonight that there is a great deal of diversity amongst background, amongst experience, perspective, any category you want to slice it into, that I hope even if it's not pursuing a council seat, that everyone stays engaged in whatever capacity they feel comfortable, whether it's serving on a city authority board or commission, being part of other ongoing city endeavors, not only sponsored by the city, but our neighborhoods and our communities and our nonprofit community that are doing a lot, because aside from the city, nonprofits are always looking for different volunteers and board members and everything like that. So while I understand that all but one person will leave tonight disappointed, believe me when I say I sympathize with someone who's been there before, but I also speak as the example that This is not your only opportunity to be seated up here and represent this community. So that being said, I will turn to other members of council if there are questions or comments before I open it up to nominations. Ms. Ramsey-Smith.
Thank you very much. I just have to say that this process has really renewed my faith in civic responsibility. I've just been so thrilled to see so many very, very well-qualified community members come forth with a desire to serve our city on city council. I hope that I thank everyone for applying and going through this process, and I hope everyone continues to be engaged in city affairs. Like Mayor Williams Reynolds said, we have the authorities, boards, and commissions that we're always looking for qualified people for. I took this process very seriously, and I thoroughly reviewed all the cover letters, resumes, and responses to the questions. And after much contemplation, I will be supporting Dr. Wanda Lynn Enix. Her resume is remarkable, to say the least. She has received a bachelor's, master's, and PhD from the best schools in this country, as well as has done postdoctoral work across the country, across the world. She has developed and implemented policies for best practices and best resources and supports for our inner city youth. She has served and has been honored by many entities in Bethlehem and beyond, and continues to serve on many boards. She is a true role model for Bethlehem. She is Bethlehem. Her family has been here for over 100 years. I didn't know her father, but I know many people that knew and spoke so well of her father, Bubbles. He was a steel worker with the United Steelworkers in Bethlehem, and he rose to the position of a union leader. Her mother was also a member of the Steelworkers Union, so she comes from a true steelworkers family. And appropriately, as we said before, her father was, there is a park on the south side named after her father. Dr. Enix's credentials are impeccable, and she will be a valuable asset to City Council and the City of Bethlehem. While the fact that she is Black and Native American did not decide my vote, it is certainly an additional bonus that this exceptionally qualified woman will bring the Black and Native American heritage and lens to City Council and our great city. And for that reason, I support Dr. Enix. Thank you.
Any other comments from members of council? Dr. Van Wert.
I just wanted to speak a little bit to the general nature. Like Ms. Ramsey-Smith and Mr. Cologne said, it takes so much courage to apply for a seat and put yourself out there, and I really respect that. A few years ago, there was nobody running against any of the incumbents in the primary, and I couldn't believe it, almost. It just seemed to me that was like a sign of a dying democracy. So I ran a write-in campaign and ultimately went through the same, and I lost, and I went through the same application process as you did. And what I would say is your involvement, I hope it doesn't end here. You know, consider this an open offer to help anybody who wants to run for council, and I'll help you, I'll give you advice, even if we don't agree on the same thing, even if you're a Republican. Run. It's really important, and I just respect so much the effort and the heart that was put into this process by all of you. I too am going to support Dr. Enix. I don't know her, unlike Mr. Cologne, but I was deeply moved by the answers to the questions she wrote. I felt like I knew her through her writing, which it was clear she put her whole heart into it. And she seemed to have a characteristic of people I admire the most, which is they get down in the mud and the muck and they strain with great patience to get stuff done. And it takes a lot of persistence and courage. And I really admire what you've done with, you know, through your life and in your lived experience. And I would welcome that to council. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. Any other, Ms. Wilhelm?
I wanted to actually start by thanking all of you who have come out to support candidates, all of you who are watching from home. It's been really inspiring to have a sense of the engagement around this process, and thank you so much for being involved. And I really wanted to be sure to take a moment to properly thank all of the candidates who put their names forward. Committing to this process
was a huge task. It's an intense experience and a vulnerable experience. And as someone who recently campaigned for this very seat, I truly do appreciate the magnitude of deciding to put oneself forward in this way for this work. After reading through and considering your applications, in particular, your responses to the questions that were put forth, I was filled with a sense of gratitude, first for your efforts, as for so many of you, your words reflected an extraordinary amount of thought and heart and experience and character. And second, I was grateful for a reminder that this city is in so many loving hands. Many of you are already doing the work of serving and supporting the city in so many ways, and I was inspired by your collective record of service to care for and investment in our community. You have demonstrated exceptional civic engagement. You've educated young people as teachers and professors. You're multilingual, world-traveled. Some were born and raised here, and some chose Bethlehem as your home. You are and have been inspiring leaders of impactful nonprofits, and some of you have founded your own nonprofits. You've helped build schools and served our country in the military. You have an extraordinary history and track record of volunteer service, and that just scratches the surface. And it's clear that you all love Bethlehem and are deeply and truly invested in the continued and growing success of our city and all of its residents. So I want to thank you all for your commitment to our community, for your willingness to serve on council, and for your efforts over the last 2 weeks as you put yourself forward in this process. And I hope your involvement won't end here. And I didn't intend necessarily to make this statement in advance of the nominations, but I will add, for all of the reasons stated here, I don't think I can state them better, that I will be supporting Wandalyn Enix this evening as well. Thank you.
Ms. Leo?
I think a heart of service is very important if you're going to be up here doing anything. So I just wanted to take a second to thank you, Mr. Cunningham, for your service to this country. I really appreciate it.
Ms. Quita?
Just briefly, I can't say it any better than Kira did in terms of how she described all of folks who put their names forward, who put their heart and soul into these answers. I spent my weekend reading them. I had them all spread out on my dining room table, and so many great ideas, so much, so many different perspectives. We are very, very fortunate. I ran for office for the first time in 2009, and I lost. I didn't run for city council. I ran for county commissioner. It was heartbreaking, and it took me 12 years to get over it and run again. I hope, for Bethlehem's sake, it won't take all of you 12 years to decide to put yourselves out there again. And I look forward to getting to know all of you better as we serve here and try to move things forward in our city. I hope that all of you will continue to be involved and join our ABCs and all the ways that you can help Bethlehem and help us as the city council, because we need you. Thank you.
Any other comments from members of council? At this point, nominations are in order to fill the vacant city council seat. If you would like to nominate a candidate, simply raise your hand and we'll acknowledge, say, I nominate person, state their name, for the vacant city council seat. Now again, a member may nominate more than one candidate if they so choose. It'll require two different nomination statements, and not every member of council has to make a nomination. So do any members of council have nominations to fill the city council seat? Ms. Kwiatek?
I would like to nominate Dr. Wandalyn Enix for the vacancy on city council.
Ms. Wandalyn Enix is nominated. Any other nominations for members of council? Ms. Leo?
I would like to nominate John Marquette for the seat.
Mr. Marquette is nominated. Are there any? Ms. Leone again?
Yeah, I would also like to nominate Michael Cunningham.
Mr. Cunningham is nominated. Any other nominations from members of council? There are no further nominations for the vacancy, and I will now consider nominations closed. I will ask the clerk to read the names of the individuals who have been nominated to fill the vacancy, and we will then move into the first roll call vote.
The following individuals have been nominated to fill the council vacancy: Dr. Enix, Mr. Marquette, and Mr. Cunningham.
We're going to proceed with the roll call vote. When the clerk calls your name for the vote, please state the name of the one candidate that you wish to vote for on our first ballot. And again, you may only give one name at this time per vote. Will the clerk call the roll on the nominees to fill the vacancy?
Ms. Kwiatek?
Dr. Wanda Lynn Enix.
Ms. Leong?
Dr. Wanda Lynn Enix.
Dr. Van Wert?
Dr. Wanda Lynn Enix.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Dr. Wanda Lynn Enix.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Dr. Wanda Lynn Enix.
Mr. Cologne?
Ms. Wanda Lynn Enix. The clerk will read Resolution 10E, incorporating Ms. Wanda Lynn Enix's name into the resolution.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that pursuant to the Third Class City Charter Law, Section 406A, Dr. Wanda Lynn Enix is hereby appointed to fill the vacancy on Bethlehem City Council as a result of the resignation of Mayor J. William Reynolds on January 3rd, 2022, and who shall serve until their successor council member is elected and duly sworn into office on January 2nd, 2024.
Any discussion on the appointment resolution? I'll just say I congratulate Ms. Enix and I welcome you to Bethlehem City Council. If the clerk will please call the roll on the appointment resolution. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll on the resolution.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leong?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. The resolution passes 6-0. Ms. Wanda Lynn Enix has been appointed to Bethlehem City Council and will be a voting member beginning February 15th at our next City Council meeting. Congratulations, Ms. Enix.
Thank you.
Ms. Enix, I am going to ask you, just for a procedural purpose, to please step out into the hall. Christina over here will meet you. There is some paperwork that we have to get started. Just as a formality, if you don't mind. And then once I adjourn the meeting, if you don't mind coming up to speak to these two gentlemen to my left and right, once the meeting is over shortly. Thank you. So that concludes the agenda for tonight. We'll move on to new business. Again, we will hold Ms. Enix is swearing in ceremony at the beginning of the February 15th council meeting, and then she will be seated up here at the dais and begin voting that same night. And before I open up to other members of council for any comments, just want to remind everyone, beginning at the next city council meeting, we're going to be opening the phone lines back up for public comment for individuals who want to comment from home. And we will be putting information on the city website this week with information about how to reach council remotely for future council meetings. Any other new business from members of council?
Mr. Clone?
Mayor?
Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate Dr. Enix. This is a historic day in the city of Bethlehem. And if And Dr. Enix, I know you've been part of many committees, and you've made that long walk down the second floor to the mayor's conference room, and you walked past the wall of all of the people that have been on city council. And Jeanine and I were walking by the other day, and we were counting. And we probably looked silly like little kids, but we think there's been 75, with the picture still to come of the new members of 79. And this is a historic day. So we need you to get that picture to Mr. Vanoni as soon as possible. So the next time that you walk down to talk to us, it's up there and you can see yourself. So I just wanted to say that. Congratulations, Dr. Enix. Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
there's no other comments tonight from members of the council, thank you for coming out, everyone, and being with us this evening. We'll see you around. Good night.